Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to IDFC First Bank Q1 FY24 results conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Chintan Shah from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Q1 FY24 results conference call for IDFC First Bank. We have with us from the management, Mr. V. Vaidyanathan, Managing Director and CEO, IDFC First Bank, along with the management team. So without further delay, I would like now to hand over the floor to the management. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. This is Vaidyanathan.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Sudhanshu Jain.
Hi, everyone. This is Saptarshi Bapari.
First of all, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for this evening call. We are all very happy to speak to you. We are quite happy as we are presenting this quarter's results because this is now establishing the steady direction we have set for ourselves, and almost all the numbers we have that the last few quarters, they seem to be just continuing on a linear curve in terms of the loan book, in terms of earnings, in terms of profitability. So I'd say that this is pretty much on track, and I'd imagine no major surprises. But I'd like to step back and actually share with you what are the key things that we feel. This is a top-line comment that comes to our mind off the cuff. One is that when we look at our bank, oftentimes we tend to think of it that we have a loan book that is now coming across linearly, and so the deposits. But actually, when we look at the bank, it's a lot more than just a loan book. We have brought out in the presentation what are the various lines of business we do. So apart from the lines of businesses we mentioned, we are now beginning to have a very strong presence in the NRI banking, wealth management, credit card business, within which we've got private card, millennial card, and various versions of that. We've got this FASTag. We are now gaining traction in trade finance, in transaction banking, cash management, treasury, supply chain solution, corporate lending, the whole thing. So now, let me just say the first point therefore I'd say is that the bank is becoming more and more a universal bank, and the lines of revenue are pretty much getting much more diversified compared to, let me say, being only a lending business where the fee income normally becomes disbursement income or maybe the annual income we get from customers as they start transacting with us. With a much wider range, we are able to, on a bank platform, we're able to, of course, deliver to the customers a much wider suite of services, and the consequence, of course, start getting revenue lines across. The second thing to note for the bank, of course, is that on the lines of businesses within lending, it's now really very diversified. Close to about 24% of the loan book of the bank is 28% actually is backed by mortgages, which is basically 24%, which is home loans and loan against property. We've got business banking product, which is basically working capital to small businesses. That is, again, backed by property or mortgages. We've got Kisan Credit Card, about 1% of our book. Book meaning the whole book, not retail. It's the whole bank-level book. So we've got that. We've got business banking is about 3% of the book. If you add all of them up, close to about 28% of the book is now backed by mortgages. Then you've got Wheels, which is about 10% of the book. Commercial vehicle and construction equipment financing is 2%. Consumer loans is 13%. Education loan is 1%. Credit card is 2%. Other retail loans are 7%. Gold loans is just what started, I guess, less than 1% now. Then rural finance is 11%. SME is 5%. Large corporate is 1%. Emerging corporate is 7%. financial institution like lending to NBFCs, etc., is about 8%. So you get the drift, and now infra, of course, is now 2%. So the second point I would like to leave behind with you is that the bank's advances have become really very diversified. So we also feel very much at peace that no one business can really, the movement or a odd behavior in one in any one business has not really significantly altered the credit performance of the bank on overall basis. The third thing that I want to flag to you is the way the deposits are growing. Now, frankly, you know, it's a good, nice credit environment, and I think most banks are now posting really good results. If you see all of the results that came out, I think they're all growing well, and NII is growing well for most banks. So it's income and so profits, etc. But I think what is really standing out for our bank is the way deposits are growing. This is very important, actually, because, you know, our bank, as compared to many other organizations, we have to also pay off, legacy liabilities of the infrastructure era that we inherited in the bank, and which helped us in our days. But as of today, they're rather high cost. So most banks, I'd imagine, will need deposits for growing the loan book and for getting the corresponding SLR. But in our case, we need that plus we need the need to pay off those deposits. So the good thing is that deposits are growing. To give you an idea, our total customer deposits have grown from 38,455 crores on the 31st of December 2018, that's at the time of merger. Today it is 1,48,000 crores. That's a growth of 1,10,000 crores in 4 years. So this is something that is like really stunning for our bank, the way the deposits are coming. It's coming really very strong. But, you know, this also does not tell you the full story, because you might argue it's 1,48,000 and it looks good on the face of it. It's a CAGR of 36%. But what is more important actually is the composition of this, because the composition of the original 38,000 crores we talked about, that had 73% of that was wholesale deposits and 27% was retail. Today, on our 1,48,000 crores of deposits, 77% is retail on much larger base, and only 23% is wholesale. So you see that's what's happened here, that not only the deposit base has grown, just diversified very much in retail. This is really a very, very positive thing. The last thing, again, talking about deposits, is that our now CASA deposits are now touching 71,000 crores. Now, again, this is very good for a reason. If you recollect, when the merger had just happened, since we had a large deposit base, I think something like 28,000 crores or so, or a bit more than that, of legacy high-cost deposits where we're paying 9%. So for us, 7% looked very, very inexpensive. So we started paying 7% on savings rates at that point of time to raise the money. But what we did was, along the way, somewhere in 2021, we dropped that rate from 7% to 4% for up to 10 lakhs. Now, that is a big drop to you. I hope everyone will agree. It's not like 25, 50 basis points, like 300 basis points straight from 7% to 4%. But when we did that, you know, the surprise of surprises that deposits still rise. I'd ask someone to help me with the number somewhere, but if I'm not mistaken, something like about 44% or 45% of the growth in retail deposits is still going on. And on the CASA front, the deposits have grown by YOY of 27%.
That's right.
So 27% growth in YOY CASA deposits in this environment, and money shifting over to TDs, and that too after we drop the, you know, our primary bucket, because 1 to 10 is a primary bucket, almost, you know, most money is lying here, and after that is dropped to 4%, is something that is really quite, I don't know what to say, it's looking so good. So our deposit is coming really very well. Now, the next thing is about what's happening to our asset quality. Just give me a moment. I'm just pulling out my papers here. In terms of asset quality, yeah, thanks. Sorry. So in terms of asset quality, we have the retail, rural, and SME financing. That is 1,36,000 crores. Now, which is really let me say the larger part of it, and that is going has a gross NPA of only 1.53% now. Our net NPA in the segment is only 0.52%. Now, our infrastructure financing is still, of course, NPA is quite high, it's 23.27%. But the good news is that its book itself has come down to only 3,571 crores. So all in all, a bank level, NPA has come down to 2.1%, including infra. So if you strip out infra, which is just a legacy book, will go away, it's only a matter of time. Even today, our gross NPA has come down to only 1.71%. And our net NPA has come down to 0.44%, again, excluding infra. So when you think of our bank, I know all of you look at the headline number of the bank level NPA, which everybody does, 2.17. You should, because there's a fact. But you should, for a moment, you should strip off infra and see the numbers at 1.7 and 0.44. And this will give you a lot of comfort. And frankly, at the board level in the bank, it gives us also a lot of comfort, because we know that there's not much to bother about from here on. The next thing is, of course, is the way our SMA is there. Our SMA numbers are really quite good now. Our SMA and the retail front is only 0.85%. So to celebrate that NPA is low is one thing, which it is, but to know that the pipeline leading to NPA, that is SMA, which is SMA 1 plus SMA 2, which is 31 to 60 and 61 to 90 bucket, that is only 0.85, means that the feeder that feeds into NPA is really so low. So therefore, we look forward with great confidence about asset quality in the coming quarters also. If I want to step one step back and see what is leading to such a low SMA, then it is actually collection percentages. So in collection percentages, we track what is the collection we get in our primary bucket. You know, our industry term uses few terms, but I don't want to confuse you. But the term that we use is zero, that is the current bucket, is the bucket we track for collection efficiency, because after all, it's a current bucket that leads to 0 to 30, 0 to 30 leads to 31 to 60, 31 to 60 leads to 61 to 90, and so on. Then we talk the current bucket. So in the current bucket, our collection efficiency is 99.5%. And this 99.5%, sometimes people say, oh my God, it's so benign environment, so you must be so good. But no, if you go back, you know, in this investor presentation, we've actually given that field for 24 months in a stretch. And every time it is like in that zone of 99.4, 99.6%. So it is very, very, very stable, rock stable. Now, what is even more interesting about this is that you know you might have noticed that some lenders report that collection percentage is 107%, 105%, and all that. We never cross 100. Why? Because in our calculation, we take only EMI collectible this month, and we compare that against what is EMI collected this month. Just EMI to EMI this month. So we don't take any arrears in these calculations. And we also never take any prepayments in these calculations, because that takes the numbers all wonky, because you know the numbers can go above 100, below 100, and all that. So when we exclude arrears, exclude prepayments, our collection continues at 99.5%. So that is what is feeding to SMA, and then SMA feeds to NPA, and you know how the rest of the trick works. So overall, we feel that our because our deposits are coming strong, our SMA is low and NPA is low, etc., we are at least looking forward to a good let me say a good few quarters coming up. In fact, we're feeling more confident for the next quarter, and even more confident for the next quarter after that. But almost I wish we had a time machine. We can jump a couple of quarters and report numbers to you. It's looking at least from our end, it's looking that good. So if you have any concerns or anything like that, please feel free to share with us, because we are giving our point of view, because that's what we are seeing from within. Sometimes we don't want to get lost in our voice. So we do request you to be open with us and tell us if you have any concern. I understand we don't have the vintage of, let me say, established players of, let me say, the big four banks who all have 20, 25, 30 years. So you may have a lot more to track for them and feel more comfortable with them. I can understand that. But we are seeing our numbers. We are feeling pretty good from within. But you feel free to really ask us any question that you feel this is important to ask at this stage, so that you can comfort get the required comfort.
So can we open the question and answer session?
I can check with Sudhanshu if he wants to make an opening remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Vaidya. I'm just again touch upon a few key numbers while Vaidya has covered a few of them. So some repetition may be there, but let me just call out the key numbers from my perspective. To start with, I will say the overall balance sheet of the bank grew by 24% on a YY basis to reach rupees 2.49 lakh crores. On the lending side, we see a strong growth, as well as on the deposit front, as Vaidya mentioned. Customer deposits grew by 44% on a YOY basis. In fact, the growth in retail deposits was higher at 51% on a YOY basis. CASA deposits for us grew at 27% on a YOY basis. Even sequentially, the growth was 3% if we adjust for outflow in Q1, which happened from one large corporate government bank account, which we had called out in Q4 23. Average CASA ratio stood at 46% for Q1 24. Average current account deposits increased with 38% during the year, while average CASA increased with 30% on a YOY basis. Term deposits, of course, we saw faster growth due to overall increase in the interest rates in the system. I would say the growth even in term deposits were largely driven by retail. CASA and term deposits less than 5 crores was at 81% of customer deposits, which points to granularity of deposits. Retail deposits stood at 77% of the total customer deposits. This used to be as low as 27% in merger, as Vaidya touched upon. We opened 15 branches during the current quarter, thereby taking the branch count to 824 branches. The high-cost legacy borrowing, which would run down in next 2 to 3 years, has come down to 16,000-odd crores. About ₹3,005 crores is scheduled for rundown in balance of this year itself. We have given more details around this in the presentation on slide 27. Moving on to the funded assets, it grew by 25% on a YOY basis to reach ₹1.7 lakh crores. I have been split this into four segments. One is retail for personal consumption, second is rural financing, third is SME and corporate financing for business purpose, and lastly the infrastructure segment, which is the rundown book. The retail book, which comprises of mortgages, consumer loans, credit cards and wheels, grew by 27% on a YOY basis and 6.8% sequentially. We have seen strong growth across all categories, like home loan grew by 31% on a YOY basis. Wheel segment, which includes two-wheelers and car, grew by 45% on account of increased distribution. Consumer loans comprising of consumer durable, personal loans and cross-sell grew by 15% YOY. Credit card book grew by 68% on a smaller base. The bank has now issued more than 1.7 million cards since the launch in January 21. Cross spends on credit card increased by 72% on a YOY basis. Moving on to the rural financing book, which primarily helps in meeting the PSL requirements of the bank, that grew by 46% on a yearly basis. Funding to SME for business purposes and corporate segment increased by 24% on a YOY basis. Infrastructure book, which is the last portion, which degrew by 44% YOY and is now merely 2.2% of the total funded assets. We have given more details in slide 46 of the presentation. Moving on to the asset quality, gross NPA of the bank further improved by 33 bps to 2.17%. and net NPA improved by another 15 bps to 0.70% during the quarter. PCR gross of technical write-offs stood at 83% at the end of June quarter. Even in the retail, rural and the SME segment, GNPA improved sequentially by 12 basis points and net NPA is down to just now 0.52%. The corporate non-insured book continues to be well provided with a PCR of 99.4%. Gross slippages were lower by 1% and net slippages were lower by 30% on YOY in absolute basis. Net slippages were lower by 19% even compared to the previous quarter. The overall standard restructured book as a percentage of total funded assets has further reduced to 0.47% as compared to 0.59% last quarter. The bank holds a provision cover of 25% on this book. Also to note, more than 85% of this book is secured in nature. Vaidya touched upon the SMA book position in the retail segment. I would add that even in the corporate book, the ratio of SMA 1 and 2 is around 0.2%. Moving on to profitability, profit after tax for Q1 increased to Rs. 765 crores versus Rs. 474 crores in Q1 FY23. Adjusted for one-time items which we had called out in Q4, PAT increased sequentially from Rs. 701 crores to Rs. 765 crores. This was largely driven by strong growth in the core operating income. Core operating profit, which is NI plus fees, excluding trading gains and OPEX, grew by 45% YOY to Rs. 1427 crores. On a quarterly annualized basis, the ROA stood at 1.26%, the ROE stood at 11.78% for Q1 24. ROE was impacted by about 60 basis points during the quarter as compared to Q4 23 on account of capital infusion, which happened in the last week of March 23. NIM on an AUM basis moderated by 8 bps to 6.33% for Q1 24. The credit cost on an annualized basis as a percentage of average funded assets was at 1.16% for Q1, which is well below earlier guidance of 1.5%. Moving on to the last section in my opening remarks, the bank has maintained strong capital adequacy and CAR was at 16.96% at June, with a CET ratio at 13.7%. During the quarter, we raised Tier 2 of Rs. 1,500 crores. The bank has maintained an average LCR of 125%. We would like to maintain the same broadly around these levels. Our long-term credit rating was upgraded by two rating agencies during the quarter, so that was also a positive development for the bank. With this, I conclude my opening remarks and we can move on to the Q&A. Thank you.
So thank you, friends. I must make one small confession to you. I just dozed off, you know, in the last maybe hour or so just before the con call. So just I woke up and suddenly Sudhanshu said con call is starting. So I just hope that whatever we made our opening remarks, I mean, my Sudhanshu was well prepared, but my opening remarks at least were, at least in context. And in case there were any gaps in my opening remarks, please excuse and you can fill them up in the course of the conversation. So and I'm completely up and running as we speak now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Lalit Deo from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Congratulations on a great setup number. So, sir, like, I have two questions. So, sir, firstly, on the branches side, so that we have added about like 15 branches during this quarter. And now, on the competitive side, like, we are seeing some large private banks becoming aggressive in adding newer branches. So how are we looking in terms of adding newer branches over the next 2 to 3 years?
We'll keep adding as required, maybe 150 in that zone.
So like 150 on an annual basis, like, or like over the next
annual, maybe. We keep also fluid on this front. Basically, we keep planning our liability requirements. So we know that we need the, you know, we need to grow the, we are planning at least to grow the balance sheet by 25%. So 25% meaning that we need 40,000 crores on a 1,60,000 crores. If you need 1 lakh, we need 40, you mean actually 50,000 crores of deposits. So we will put as many branches required to roughly take us in that zone. So it could be 150, could be 200. We keep ourselves in that window. We are not putting out any specific number. Like we don't put a specific target on this because our needs, we just plan it to the requirements, as we implement the requirements.
Sure, sir. And sir, second question will be on the deposit side. So currently, what will be our average cost of deposits, saving account deposits as of now? And we have recently increased our peak saving rates to 7% in the 10 lakh to 50 crores category right now. So do we foresee any other further increase in those peak rates?
No, we don't intend to. If you notice, the biggest difference between this and what we did earlier is that up to 10 lakhs, you pay only 4. So really, whether we pay 6.5 or 7 makes no difference to that bucket.
And so what would be our average cost to start saving or deposit as of now?
Average cost of saving deposits is about 5.6%.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Rahul Jha from Bay Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Great set of numbers. Congratulations.
Thank
so,
you.
So, my question was on the regards of two things. One, see, the profitability has consistently improved over the last, say, 6 quarters. So, what next, what levers are you trying to pull to get to the next stage? More philosophical and strategic question. A second on the this thing, earlier on the credit card, I think the bank was only offering it to existing customers. But now that you have launched a few co-branded and others, so what is the strategy there? Are you open to outside of new to bank and other kinds of customers as well?
So we take first things first, your profitability. What levers are we pulling? See, frankly, ours is a pretty steady machine. We always maintain that our retail assets return on equity is running upward of 20% on stock, not on incremental, on stock, when we see our earnings minus cost of funds, that kind of stuff. So that's hitting 20% return on equity. So as this machinery keeps growing, ROE of the bank will, keep going up now. And they should hopefully stay there for a while. The second thing is that there are many other levers. Right in the beginning, I pointed out to you that now the bank is operating on many new lines of business, which are not normally visible to the market. For example, if you did cash management system, it's not visible to you. If you give a home loan or car loan, you can see it in the market. When you give CMS, none of you can touching it on data. It's like that. Your cash management is coming up. That's throwing up nice income. Our FASTag is throwing up nice income. Our wealth management business, which some select few of you may be experiencing, but that's quite profitable. So all of these things are one after the other beginning to give income actually to us. FX solutions, for example, trade and FX is a big revenue earner. We plan to expand revenue on that front quite significantly, as part of the India's global, external trade, both imports and exports, that solution. Our services in the branches about the turnarounds we give for people who want to import or export, etc., I'd say is okay, is good, but not the best in the market in terms of turnaround. For example, there are things, exporters get their money converted sometimes in our bank in 24 hours. Maybe in some banks, they even get it converted in maybe 2 hours. So when we fix that issue and we are working on that, then that can be a big revenue generator for the bank. So there are many, many lines of business that is going to fire for the bank.
Thanks. On the second one, please.
Second one is very simple to answer because in a credit card business, what we launched initially was the vanilla product, which has been quite successful for the bank because product features were good. But, the core vanilla feature alone does not meet all needs of a customer. For example, if you give a customer a good APR and a good zero joining fee, zero annual fee, and give a good product, it's good, but there are many customers have needs which are related to travel.
Right.
So for them, a co-brand partner brings much more value or brings the value to the card just like we can, and then the power of the card doubles. Like, for example, the Vistara card we launched recently, so this is also a big success. I can't say big success in terms of stock, but incremental flow demand is quite strong. So these are specific needs customers have in the market, and we will just open many more of those co-brands that are open in the market for that.
Okay. So would you be open to give customers, say, more than one card if they already have a card, because now that you have co-branded and other portfolios?
Yeah, well, it depends on the limit we'll be comfortable on a customer level.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I will come back in the queue.
Yes.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a good set of numbers.
Thank you, Nitin.
So a couple of questions. One is on the fee income. If I look at the fee income, growth has been running very strong. And the fee as a percentage of total assets, also this number is moving up and has now come up to almost 2.4%. So what is really driving this? And I'm curious to know, because like a couple of quarter back, bank launched zero banking, wherein you waived off fee for almost 25 banking services. So, but there somehow seems to be no impact of that. So how much like fee loss have we experienced because of that waiver?
No, that... In many of the things we were not charging earlier also, it didn't make a big delta difference to the bank. Of course, we waived off on quite a few charges. We felt that the fee structure in the Indian system, even for us, to the extent that we were charging, were very complicated actually. You know, and the more we poured on it, we felt the need to abolish it, and that's why we took it off. But that is not the key driver. You know, we still have other lines of businesses, so that you can explain the which line is giving how much income.
Yeah, Nitin, we have given details on slide 50. If you see, it's a very diversified pool. In fact, the loan origination fees is coming down on a quarter-on-quarter basis in terms of a proportion. That is now over 30%, whereas the other, I would say, non-capital consuming businesses are also started generating fees. Right, like the toll business that is giving fees where we have a good market share. Credit card, we know, is a good fee enabler, right? That also book is increasing. So between credit card and toll alone, the composition is about 17%. Again, we have been trying to, as we are increasing customers, we are getting more revenues from on the trade front, on the FX front, and so on. Then third-party distribution from our branches that and distribution of other products like mutual funds, SIPs and all that has been increasing. Then, so it's a very diversified pool, right? In fact, if you see that with distribution from third party and wealth management products, that fee has increased by 87% on a YOY basis, right? So it's a well diversified pool. And of course, we have already reached to about 2.3-2.4%. We feel that we will be able to maintain a strong momentum even into the future quarters on these fronts.
Right. And should we, like, how should we really model this then in terms of growth going ahead? Because the current growth is like 2x the balance sheet growth. So will this continue to grow the current run rate, or will it be closer to the balance sheet growth?
We'll have to probably pull through our own internal projections to be able to answer that. But directionally, let me say that now the bank has so many lines of business we launched last 2 or 3 years, all the names, all the lines we called out, credit card, wealth management, trade, client, FX, all the stuff, whatever, so then she pointed out, toll. So all of these are fee businesses. So we feel that there's strong growth. Let me just say that if you want to model it, we can say that if balance sheet grows by 25, fee will outstrip it by a margin. Then let me say that.
Okay, sure. And so the other question is on margins. Where are we on the cost of deposits repricing? Where is it likely to peak? And therefore, what is the outlook of margins going forward?
If it's already peaked, we're not seeing any more increase, and at least we are not finding a need to increase. You know, for example, what we pay 0 to 10, we pay 4%. We feel there's no need to touch it, because even at these rates, I mentioned earlier to you the numbers, the way they're coming in, very, very strong. So we don't feel the need to increase it from here. And anyway, looks like also the India system is tapering off. So margins should be stable from here.
Okay. And
sorry, just to add, since the cost in the TD comes with a lag, and I would say a good portion already came into this quarter, there will be some more increase which we could see, right? But as Vaidya mentioned, NIM should be broadly stable.
Increasing the cost of funds.
Yeah, cost of funds.
Slightly.
Yeah, but again, I'm saying there is a book which is also linked to MCLR. That also happens, reset happens with certain frequency. So some of these would get offset, but I see NIM to be broadly stable as Vaidya mentioned.
So give or take 10 bits, things should not be very different. If you go and do your modeling, feel comfortable to peg this approximately where we are today. And also feel comfortable to peg our credit cost pretty low around the lines what you already said, because we are, I told you already, hardly have an SMA, so we're not expecting any increase in NPA also. So pretty straight line stuff, just do it in the spreadsheet, you'll get the results for the next quarter or maybe the next year.
Sure. Thank you, sir. Thanks so much. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Pritesh Pump from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Sir, two questions. Basically, some months back, there was an article on, regulator may increase risk-weighted assets on retail, especially the unsecured side. So we having a well-managed retail unsecured book as well. So what do you see impact on a book? And if anything comes, how do you mitigate that in terms of strategy?
Well, if there is our sense is that no such real proposal is on the table or something like that, but our sense, but you know, your guess could be as good as mine. But the our sense is that even any such thing comes in the wisdom of the regulator, then it must be good for the system, and that may be proactive. So that's okay. So, but you know, we are running quite strong on capital adequacy at this point of time. So our fundamental business model is generating such high collection percentages of 99.5, giving us such low SMA, giving us such low NPA. So our fundamental strategy should not change. And if there's slight risk weight impact, and if it has to be passed on to the customer, it may be passed on also, who knows. Or if you could absorb it, we'll absorb it. We'll pay it by the year. See, frankly, we have pretty strong margin. So these small movements of 10, 20 basis points here or there are not really disturbing us other than cost of funds or any of these line items.
Got it. Sir, second question was, generally what we have seen in the large bank side, whatever disclosures have come in, the lower end of the staff or the employees have a big churn. For a bank which is growing well, strongly, how are you managing that? And what are our churning percentages, or if you can give some light on that?
Yeah, we have seen that we've seen the numbers that have come from others, and we broadly feel that in the industry across the system, the lower end people who are just joining the bank, doing sales roles, etc., their attrition is relatively higher, as comfortable environment lesser, and as you go up the chain, even lesser. We've seen our numbers are slightly lesser than what has been reported in the press for other few other banks, but you could call us somewhere in that zone, but maybe the lower end of that. But particularly what we've seen is that this year, Q1, it's better than what it was in all of last year, and last year is better than what it was the prior year in a trend line sense. So it's numbers are getting, when we come out of the annual report, we'll put some of these numbers up there.
But yes, sir. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Short term, trend line is getting better. It's getting better, and we are slightly better than the system numbers we're seeing in the press.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much for answering.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Ishan Agarwal from Erevna Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah,
first of all, congratulations to the management again for delivering a good set of numbers.
Thanks so much, Ishan.
So my first question is regarding our cost structure. I'm unable to get my head around it. As on date, if we see, we have close to 825 branches with assets worth 1,71,000 crores. And say, if I have to name a large private sector banks like Kotak, they have around 1800 branches and 360,000 crores in advances. Our OPEX, excluding employee expenses, higher than Kotak. It's almost, it's much higher than Kotak on this quarter. So why do we have such a high cost structure? What are the components which lead to such a high cost even at half the number of branches?
See, you tend to think that branches are costs. Let me just tell you that it is just one part of the cost. The main cost is the fundamental line of businesses you're in. You take a bank which is probably doing home loans. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And Ishan, right? Am I speaking to right now?
Yeah.
So Ishan, you take a bank which is probably done, you know, has only home loans, only car loans. Obviously, the OPEX will be much lesser for the business. But if you take a bank which is doing probably more of, you know, lines of businesses that we do, like say durable financing or two-wheelers or used cars or, you know, micro-enterprise loans. So these are relatively higher cost businesses. So we do have home loans. Of course, like you pointed out, we have about a 20,000 crore home loan book and we have a 20,000 crore loan against property book. But let me say in a proportion sense, let me say the X home loan business for our bank is a little bit higher. So that itself is fundamentally this one. So that's why our yield is much higher, our OPEX is higher. So you can't pick only the OPEX number and say that, oh my God, OPEX is higher. What about income? Why don't you compare our income with other bank?
I'm just saying that when I compare it with the total asset book, as well as the number of branches, and you're correctly saying that number of branches cannot be compared, but even on an advances front.
That's what I'm saying, Ishan. Just hear me out. So the point I'm trying to tell you is that composition is different. So let's take three cost structures separately. Okay, so let's so that will help you and everybody listening to understand this better. Cost comes, let's take the asset lines. So asset lines, like I said, somebody running our business lines have we are more rural, for example. Rural are more expensive. So our income line is more, OPEX is more.
Hmm.
Other banks may have lesser income, lesser OPEX.
Hmm.
In the end, we will deliver a certain ROE, they will deliver a certain ROE. Our belief is that our ROE is already running 20% plus. Okay, on the lending side. So therefore, as I said, so our combination of income and is higher income or higher OPEX, put it like that. Now, let's move to liabilities. On the liability side, of course, you know, we are setting up all the branches because you should know that we are a new bank and we are having to set up a number of, you know, all this infrastructure in a rapid pace. In the last 3 years alone, we've put up probably close to about 650-700 branches. So 650 may not be great, may not be a very big number compared to big banks, but considering it comes from the base of 150, it's like a massive 4x increase. So that's where that cost structure comes. Number three comes in the other businesses, like FastTag or wealth management, etc. Those are fee-generating businesses. So these are three areas that each line of business for us is looking more expensive because we are starting off from a zero base and building a bank, while the other banks may be already built for 20, 30 years.
May I request the management, we move to the next participant.
Let the person answer if you are not satisfied again.
So the line for the participant has dropped, sir.
Okay, no problem. So basically, just to conclude, one is the lines of one is the stage of institution. We talked about it. The our stage is new, so no one should forget that our stage is new. We are 5 years old. Others are 25, 30 years old. The second thing is that even for our bank, apart from the factors we talked about earlier, there are a number of OPEX which you take for granted the number of bills which you take for granted in an established institution. For a new institution, someone has to pay to build it. So, for example, let us say that you are giving a cash management solutions today. We are building it up. It's our OPEX today. But someone who built it 15 years ago, for them it's office already built. Today they're only earning income out of that. So think of anything. If you want to build a mobile app, we are building a mobile app today. Someone who built it 10 years ago is just reaping the income out of that today. So a new bank will go through all the setup expenses. I think this can be avoided because we're building the bank for the long run. We've taken a part of our karma to do it at this stage.
Thank you, sir. We move to our next question. That is from the line of Sagar Shah from Philip Capital. Please go ahead with your question.
Good evening, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Hi.
First of all, congratulations for another great quarter. And now I just had some few questions. My first question was on the general, on the demand front, especially on all our segments actually. So now almost we are seeing almost the peak of interest rate. Now I wanted to understand the general nature on ground that how actually customers are actually absorbing these. Are they being able to absorb the hike in rates, or are they able to absorb the increased interest rates? And because of that, what is the actual effect of that? Going ahead, will we see some increase or decrease in demand for loans, especially on the retail front this year and next year? Or you're seeing that customers are being able to easily absorb the interest rate hike? For my first question is that.
Yes, Sagar, maybe I'll take in that. Thanks for the question. As I said, we are seeing a very strong demand, right, across all products, right. Of course, in some products, we are also able to increase our market share. And I would say in terms of customers' ability, the proof of the pudding is the numbers which we are seeing in our SMA and that kind of a build-up, right. I think the rates is not much of an impact in terms of demand, the customer ability to pay and so on, right. So in fact, if you go and check the rate increase which has happened, still I would say even after the increase, the rates have reached pre-COVID, right? So I think we feel quite comfortable in terms of the growth which can come in for the bank, and we don't see this as a concern at all.
See, I'll tell you what, if you notice, by the way, it was a very good question, by the way, what you asked, saying that, look, interest rates have gone up, how are customers coping with this, right? That's a short question. That's the point.
Yes.
The thing is that I think when lenders are lending to people, they are keeping cushion. No one is lending to the customer to the brim. So let me give an example. If a customer has, say, a lakh of rupees in the bank as a cash flow, and for the EMI, the bank has calculated that the bank now reverse calculates, saying that, okay, the customer on average keeps 1 lakh in the bank on the first 2/7 of the month. Let me give the customer a loan where the EMI is 50,000. Okay. Now we gave computed 50 and he gave the loan. Customer is paying back very well. Now, if you say that interest rates have gone up, now and the customer's affordability has come down, but remember there was still already a cushion of 50 in that example they had a cushion of 50,000 already. Now even if you get a little bit of the cushion, customers are still honoring. At least we are finding that 99.5% collection we are getting for 24 months. Interest rates are high, interest rates are low. So I think it's probably because of the cushions by lenders are keeping when lending. And also one important thing, by the way, Sagar, to also note that lenders are always lending at a point of time after assessing the customer today. But with growth of GDP, suppose we lent to somebody 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if the interim GDP grows on a nominal basis by 12% and the customer's income probably has grown by 12%. So that also adds to the question, actually. I'm guessing that's the reason, at least that could be the reason why this collection percentage continues to look good.
Yeah, certainly looks by the numbers, sir. Certainly I agree that your numbers are quite robust in terms of asset quality. But But you can say my concern was related to the recent hike in interest rates. What is the effect on ground? But that's okay, I got your point. Now my second question is related to your loan against property. Your loan against property segment has actually has almost remained flat quarter on quarter. So, are we facing competition, or have we actually stopped disbursing in the segment? Are we any reasons for the same?
Not really. I mean, sometimes it could be. I think we also sold down a small part of the book actually. So that also brought down the numbers as we stand.
Okay, sure. Now my bookkeeping question actually related to I wanted the slippages number and the write-offs number for this quarter, and another I wanted the floating provisions for this quarter. How much are you holding in your balance sheet?
No, we don't keep floating provisions and all, but we do the normal credit cost is 1.2%. Maybe so I should tell you the number.
Yeah, so slippages, as I mentioned in the opening remark, though that has come off. In fact, net slippages is down by 30% on a YOY basis. Even sequentially, it's down by about 20%. And in absolute terms, that net slippage number is about 380 crores for the quarter.
So if you analyze that, that would be not very much. It's quite comfortable.
Okay, and what are the write-offs for this quarter? How much have you written off in this quarter?
We don't call out that number specifically, but in our Pillar 3 disclosures, you will get that number in due course.
But more than that, end of the day, just to get the technicalities out of the way so that you are clear about provision versus write-off issue, what hits a bank's P&L? Provisions.
Provisions, yes.
That's it. After provisions, you write off at a particular stage, whether some people write off after 360, some people after 540, some people write off after whenever. So how much you write off, when you write off is not a material thing. What you provide. So what we are providing is costing us about 1.2% on a credit cost basis.
Yeah, 1.16 for this
1.16
quarter.
1.16 for the quarter. So you should model that in your math. Of course, we guide for 1.5 and all that, but right now it's coming much lesser than that. So income minus OPEX minus that amount of provisions that we will take will be attained when we write off is a matter of technicality.
Okay, fair point, sir. Fair point. Thank you so much. All the best for your future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Ritika from Ocean Dial. Please go ahead with your question.
So thank you for the opportunity and congrats on the great set of numbers. I have two, three questions. One, I would again request you to maybe share some of your thoughts on the industry growth. You know, it's been, obviously after coming off a low base, but it's been quite some quarters and the growth remains very healthy for the sector. What, as for you, is like, the key to the same. And another surprising thing is that it's like across board. It's not just obviously a couple of bankers. It's like every banker is showing a superlative number on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So that's one. Secondly, you've been consistently showing good numbers in a profitability side. So how should we really see any guidance on that front as to look forward to? Maybe by the end of FY24, how do you look the ROAs should settle? Or if you want to give a little more longer, could also be fine. And thirdly, you did answer on the lab bit, but I would still maybe want to still maybe check your thoughts again on the strategy on the mortgage fee, including both home loan and lab. Thank you, sir.
No, thanks. All very good questions. So the last one is easy to answer because, see, frankly, this mortgage and home loans will grow forever and ever and ever. There is no end to that growth in this country, and we will keep growing it. So that's easy one. Now, with regard to industry growth, well, just what is happening, we feel, is that there is a lot of business that is getting opened up in the small and medium enterprises business and in the retail business because the Indian ecosystem has opened up, has become more conducive to organized lending. If you notice, all banks are basically by nature conservative lenders, and nobody wants to take undue risk. So what is happening is that because of the opening of the cash flow, evaluation tools have become much more better, because now most people are now doing transactions through the bank account, which is not so earlier. So when people are doing transaction in the bank account, we are able to see the transaction trails or GST trails. So with these trails, people are able to lend. So this by itself opened up the market to organized lending. So this is one really big factor why everybody is able to grow because of. Third thing is that the control systems have, you know, very much improved. For example, earlier we used to do collections by calling customers or if somebody skipped an installment and or maybe sent an agent to the customer's home to pick up the money. These days they are simply sending a UPI link and then the customer is paying a UPI link. No, agent doesn't need to go only in many cases. So I'm seeing the whole ecosystem, whether we're originating, evaluation, collection, monitoring, everything has become more conducive and feels more safe now because of availability of data and tools and all that. So that could be one reason why, you know, you're beginning to see growth, I guess, with everybody. So one was your question on what will we do with mortgage LAP? I told you it'll grow. Second, your question on why growth is coming. What is the third question? We have one more question.
Sir, it was on the ROA trajectory, because you're already at like 1.26 for the
quarter. See, now we clearly feel that ROA will stay, you know, healthy now. I don't think we're going to dip on this front, because the very important thing that we call out right from the beginning since 2018 has that we only focus and tell the market what we are truly doing on the core income. We don't try to put, you know, take some cute advantage of what happened in treasury markets and all that. So since the core operating income is now touching like 1450 crores, correct?
1427 crores.
1427 crores core, by the way. No, which is sustainable number every quarter from here on. So that number itself was so strong. So, and minus credit cost numbers, I told you, we should be comfortably above 1% for, you know, for a long, long time, probably increase from here. So if you take let me not talk about next quarter and all. I told you we're feeling quite confident about even second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, etc. But you take a 2 year, you know, we feel it's a pretty much a straight line model, at least this, you know, one odd quarter. Sometime, you know, an odd quarter ROA can come down by 2-3 basis points, can go by 2-3 basis points. You should not expect that every single quarter for lifetime, this will keep on increasing. These things don't work like that. And odd things happen. But if you take a year-by-year-by-year measure, definitely you should see 24 should be better than 23, 25 should be better than 24, 26 should be better than 25. That is something you should expect from us.
Sure, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Sonal Minas from Prescient Capital Investment Advisors, LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. This is Sonal Minas. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, Sonal.
Hi, sir. Sir, I wanted to get a bit of a broader macro understanding around the CASA in the market. We've seen the results of a couple of banks, and it almost seems like at a broader level, the CASA is dried up. And you mentioned in your notes that it's linked to intrastates, but just wanted to understand from your perspective and how you are seeing the market, your take on CASA and what is it happening in the market? That's my first question.
CASA comes from two things. It comes from the ability to provide solutions to customers, especially current mm-hmm. accounts. Because it's not about, because everybody's paying zero, then what are you going to compete? So therefore, and it's not even about rate, it's about what solutions you give the customer. That is why you'll find all the large existing banks who've been around for 20, 30 years, they have tied up the entire solutions for clients, end-to-end in a supply chain, for example, or end-to-end in a government banking business, you know, right from the time the money is released from the Government of India to the last tehsil, there is a chain of flow that happens. So it takes time to build these things. But once you build the solutions, then you start getting quite a lot of annuity income. Basically, you start getting annuity flows, and then you get starting getting annuity income. So therefore, when you think of it like that, our bank has, I really believe we have terrific opportunity because we're a new bank, we're a good tech bank. So our ability to build all the solutions, end-to-end supply chain solutions, is very good. And therefore, when we build the solution, we're already making good headway. Not great, I'd say. Not as good as it should be for a well-developed bank. We are still very low on CAR, but we are making very good progress on this front. That's on the CAR front. On the SAR front, that market is a bit different because SAR is a bit of a it's a very service-oriented business.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we are paying 4, but money's like flowing in like crazy into a bank on the deposit front. So then when we are paying only 4 up to 10 lakhs, why is money coming to us like this? I'd imagine brand, definitely when you become a brand, that's a very crucial moment in the institution's life. When you become a good brand, money starts coming in. Then service level, we get very, I rarely get upset about anything, but the one thing I get personally very upset is say for customers, some customers have been dealt very badly, or anything like that, and there's some systemic issue at a bank. So we take customer service very, very seriously, and we try to offer high quality service to customers. So let me just say brand, service, even pricing to an extent, all of these things combine to give a good SAR balance. At least in our case, SAR is coming from other banks, obviously. We are not, obviously we're growing at 40%. It's not that India is growing at 40. It's coming to us from somewhere. But I think it's coming because of brand. It's one of the factors in brand.
And you expect the trend to continue like the way it is going for that?
Yes, it seems so. At least for us, we feel very confident for the upcoming 3-5 quarters. You should expect that our deposit, on liabilities and deposits should be 40-45. We should continue to report numbers in this zone. We will. I'm pretty confident of that. Because that's how we're seeing flow in our branches right now. And there is something that is interesting with the brand. Brand is just not being that, oh my God, people know about their brand. It's not about knowing. No. Not the quality. The quality I talked about already. I'm going to say something different. See, the one thing is the brand saying that, do people know your brand? Obviously, our brand is much less known than an ICICI bank or an HDFC bank or any of those banks. So obviously it is so. That's fine, but that's the reality of our life stage at this point of time. But question is, even among people who know, what do they think of you? This is very important. That's where the brand character comes. So they maybe may think of, if you take out the top 4 banks, let me say ICICI, HDFC, Axis, Kotak, who are all very well-known banks and great banks. If you see the next tier banks, that is our bank, Bandhan, IndusInd, Yes Bank, etc. Now, let me say that we are a mid-tier bank in that family of banks. Now, but even among these banks, you cannot say that all customers think the same thing about all these 4 banks. We may be similarly known, but people just think, fortunately, quite well about a bank. So what people think about us and whether they know us are 2 separate things, actually.
That's exactly. That's, I think, the longer term, as you said, that gets built up over time.
That is over time. But somehow we are enjoying that image. How it comes, I don't know. But we are enjoying that image and money just come to us. Whenever you go to any location, open a branch, boom, one flush of cash comes to the bank straight away.
Got it, sir. So my second question is linked to the credit card business. It's a smallish business which is going fairly well. Just wanted to understand if you could disclose broadly what is the credit cost we working in that particular business, just to understand, because I think there is not too much of a disclosure, which is understandable, but broadly, if you could just guide a little bit on credit cost in that business, that will help understand where are we heading in that business.
Oh, we should expect really good return on equity in the business. I've personally done that business for close to over 20-25 years now. My colleague Madhivanan has done the business forever, and he's pretty much mastered the business. You know, under him, he's a colleague called Shirish Bhandari, who's also done the business for long. So we are a bunch set of people who know the business really very well. And of course, there's a people in it. So we are very confident of that business. And we believe return on equity and credit card business will exceed 24-25% as and when it comes, whenever it comes of age. And, you know, if you want to understand truly the credit card business economics in a stripped down basis end to end, you take the listed company SBI cards. I mean, it's a monoline credit card financing business. So see the economics. So there's no reason.
They have a credit cost of 6.5%. So that's why I was just trying to benchmark that.
That's a little high. We have lent largely credit cards to our existing customers at this point of time, and people who have savings account with us and all. So we don't, you know, an NPA. I think I put out an NPA numbers in the investor presentation somewhere. Gross is some 1.7 or something. Net is some 0.2, 0.3 or 0.4, something like that. So we don't have a, we are not in those kind of numbers of credit costs. But still, if you understand the economics of that business, just look at SBI credit card. They're doing a wonderful job, and you see the economics there.
Thank you.
Are we done, folks? I thought we spent quite some time discussing 7.
So we have a question from the line of Mr. Jai Mundra from ICICI Securities.
Okay, can we take that as the last question, Jay?
Yes, sir. Hi. So this would be the last question, sir. I wanted to check, sir, now that asset quality outcomes have been much better, and as you said that, you know, we have been following a very, let's say, robust process, which is giving us the confidence of that asset quality should remain benign. In that context, sir, would you like to sort of accelerate the loan growth from current 25% level, which is what we are reporting, or you think this kind of a level of loan growth is, you know, commensurate to kind of asset quality outcomes that you are seeing? So what I wanted to check is, are the better operating environment would help you to push the pedal on growth, or you think this is a fine balance as of now?
I said that we should be very careful here. Like I said, the enabling environment has become much better today than before. But, you know, we have one fetish in our organization that, you know, we have a 12-year record that our gross NPA is low, net NPA low. It gives us a lot of confidence to continue to do the business. We would hate it if that moved up even, you know, 10, 20 basis points to the, in the wrong side. So that's very important that for us, our gross NPA stays around 1.7-ish or so, and net stays around 0.4, 0.5. Very important to us. Number two, so we won't want to, we don't want to test the limits on that front. Second thing is that for us to grow, we tell ourselves internally all the time that we don't need to relax norms at all. Just you don't have to do it. So we are such, relatively such a small player in the market that if you want to do some more business, all you need is just, you know, in the same city, just add some more distribution points, just open one more city, just add one more credit business line, like we just launched gold loans recently or education loans, just add one thing more and boom, you get volumes. So we don't need to grow anything more. And to give guidance on the, lastly on the question on that, you said, can we go beyond 25? Let me answer that very specifically. So thus far, for the last 3 or 4 years, what you've been seeing is that the wholesale is coming down, infrastructure is coming down, and that, and retail is going greater than 25. So blend, frankly, is going at 25. Let me say in a couple of years from now, the degrowth in infrastructure will stop because it can't go below zero and it'll head towards there. So when but even then we'll like to grow the balance sheet only at 2025. Let me say 2325. Which means that the retail growth itself will taper down towards that number. Today, retail is growing more than 25, wholesale is growing less than 25, blend is 25. Let me say in a couple of years, retail itself will grow only at 25. And if you keep it at 25-25, it can grow for a long time. We don't need to disturb that, that. We don't need to grow faster than that.
Sure.
Even if you grow something at 23-24 for a long time, over 8 years, 10 years, 15 years, that it's a pretty, it can be a pretty good compounding story. Why grow faster than that?
Sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Due to time constraint, that was the last question of our question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
No, I have no closing comments to make. I want to just thank all of you. So that's what you want to say.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thanks for a patient hearing. Have a great weekend.
And all we can say is that you've been with us even in our, let me say, harder days. Now we probably have a little more happier moment coming our way. If you watch our story for the next 2 or 3 years, even those who are not convinced, you know, bit by bit you'll get more comfortable with us. That's all I can say. Thanks very much.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.